You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM.
Cuchillo is Spanish for knife, and it's also the latest upscale restaurant to open in Vancouver's downtown east side. While for many Vancouverites, dining at a trendy new eatery is sociable and entertaining, Cuchillo is in a neighborhood where 70% of the residents cannot afford to eat there. Anti-displacement advocates say this is going to bring in money from other neighborhoods, increase surrounding property values, and force the most vulnerable out of their already precarious homes. Joining me in the studio is Richard Marquez. Richard was born and grew up in San Francisco, where he was an anti-displacement activist. He's now currently a social worker in the downtown east side. Hello, Richard.
Good morning.
Now, tell me a little bit about Cuchillo.
Cuchillo. It means, of course, as you mentioned, in Spanish, it means knife. And it's unfortunately a tragic yet perfect metaphor for the intentions of the owners of the building and the establishment, because we're calling it a stab into the heart of the downtown east side, this low-income community. Cuchillo is a destination restaurant, but it's so much larger than just that. It represents a cultural, spatial, social shifting of what's happening in the downtown east side. It's really an effect of cultural forces that are part of gentrification, which, as you know, it's speculation of real estate values and development of condo towers and displacement and evictions of very vulnerable, powerless, low-income people. But with that comes high-end restaurants, boutique shops, kind of a pushing out of the existing working class culture that remained.
Now, you're from San Francisco. You're a third generation of Mexican heritage. I guess your grandparents came from Mexico. As someone with that background, how do you relate to the kind of restaurant that this is? It's a Mexican themed restaurant. What's your reaction to it?
Well, I like to say that, you know, I say it humorously, but at the same time, there's a certain intent of being kind of enraged by the insults of the menu. It's not food that mi abuelita would have cooked, my grandmother would have cooked, right? They're certainly not selling bannock or burritos there. Tacos are $21, and they're made with a bunch of pan-Latin mixtures and seasonings and sauces and approaches that are completely foreign to what I'm used to in terms of growing up with traditional Mexican cuisine.
Is there a theme of the Day of the Dead in the restaurant, too?
Absolutely. They're pretty subtle about it, and they actually used a local artist to help design a poster. When you enter Cuchillo, if I can walk you through real briefly and quickly, when you walk through it, to the left, there's a display wall of a mural of a wrestler. His name is Hurucan Ramirez, and he was a film star in Mexico in wrestling films, very popular among working-class people. So that's to your left, and it's kind of wrinkled and torn, so it gives you this kind of edgy, urban, back alley advertising kind of mural. So that's what you have when you first walk in. But it has a menacing kind of approach to it in terms of the lighting and so forth. So there's a racialized element to it too. And there's a caricaturing of, I think, what's stereotypically viewed sometimes by the mass media as the kind of brutalization of what's going on in Mexico, that kind of widespread belief, right? And then as you walk through toward the kitchen area, you have six mosaic skulls. And clearly they're a ripoff of Day of the Dead in Mexico and in Latin America. And Day of the Dead, of course, is a celebration and an honoring or an affirmation of both life and the continuum of death of ancestors. And Día de los Muertos, what it's really called, Day of the Dead, it's really about acknowledging the loved ones that we've lost. And it's not unusual, it's very common that there's processions. It's not completely religious, but it's very spiritual in intent. It's bringing offerings to grave sites. People build homemade altars. Certainly my family did that. And it's acknowledging life and cherishing those that have passed. And they're certainly pulling elements from that. If you look at Twitter, at Cuchillo's Twitter site, for example, the pictorial background of their Twitter site is a picture of a mural of a print by Jose Guadalupe Posada. And Posada is an international icon known for Day of the Dead. And then, of course, Cuchillo does not give any credit to that usage and that adoption. They don't even mention Posada. And if you begin to look at their website, they use skulls and they use cadavers and they use skeletons. That's always synonymous with Day of the Dead. So certainly there is cultural counterfeiting going on. There's a ripping off and there's a misappropriation of symbolism and meanings of what's deeply traditionally Mexican.
Now, I introduced you as an anti-displacement activist, and you grew up in the Mission District.
Correct.
Of San Francisco. Let's look at that as a way to understand what's happening here. What happened to the Mission District, or what is happening to the Mission District?
So many different waves, successive waves of displacement and evictions and deportations. My grandparents, as you mentioned, came to San Francisco really right after the Mexican Revolution in 1915. So third generation going back. But if we speed this up to contemporary times, certainly around the year 2000, San Francisco was hit by something called the dot-com boom. But there was also a bust afterwards. But previous to the bust, a lot of dot-com companies, digital media companies and so forth, decided that they were startups, so they couldn't afford to work and establish business in the downtown San Francisco's finance real estate market. So they had to go to the adjoining neighborhoods that were closer to downtown. So they landed in the Mission District, this kind of gentrified, privileged class. And they began essentially pillaging the affordable housing stock through raising rents by landlords. Small companies started buying buildings and converting them into offices and live-work lofts / working places. And so you saw a whole kind of rampaging going on where nonprofits were being pushed out, traditional nonprofits serving immigrant families, artists as well were being pushed out, and just working families. And so that was a really large, significant blow to what was a working-class Latino character of the Mission just being pushed out in less than 10 years. It continues. There's now a new wave of a boom that's happening, too, where there's a mass rash wholesaling of evictions as well going on. This is also akin to what's going on to a district not far from the Mission District called the Tenderloin. And the Tenderloin, unfortunately, became the recent headquarters of Twitter. They have their global headquarters right there in San Francisco in one of the most poorest low-income neighborhoods in the city. That's pushing all kinds of people out of both the Mission District, which adjoins it, and the Tenderloin. So you have this out-migration that's been going on for the last 20 years intensely in San Francisco, where poor, disabled, elderly, immigrant families, people of color, are essentially forced into exile.
There is this, I think, belief among people who are who don't live down here or are not familiar with the issues down here, that bringing in businesses and bringing in people with more money is helping the area because the area is traditionally very economically depressed. The housing stock is not good, that it's actually helping. And why is there this protest against bringing this area kind of up in the world, you might say?
Sure. I mean, it goes back to, I think, really the protest is really, it's a cry and a demand at the same time. These are like longstanding false rationales that have been used to really underdeveloped communities. And it's assistance for a big business. It's assistance to real estate developers and financial firms that are behind that shifting and that usurping of the soil and the land and developing a whole new different downtown Eastside vision. The majority of tenants and residents that live here that I work with as a social worker, you know, they're making less than $7,000 a year. As a matter of fact, from this radio station, as you well know, within a 6-block radius, one of the highest medical and social service demands by the population exists in the entire Metro Vancouver. So certainly these businesses are not set up as employment opportunities for disabled residents and or unemployed impoverished residents. What we see, the parallel with San Francisco, because the same rationale applied to the Mission District and the Tenderloin, we see a couple of features that are very distressingly tragic. One you see is the out-migration of the least amount of African Americans of any major city in the country is happening in San Francisco. San Francisco also has, again, the dishonorable distinction of having the least amount of children that live in the city because people can't afford the rents. They can't buy homes, essentially, are cutting corners everywhere. We're seeing the same thing happening, of course, in Vancouver. But in the downtown east side, it's even more severe in terms of how distressing it is to the population that surrounds destination sites like Ucchio, because that's followed by more real estate development. So you see the affordable housing stock being turned over to condos. There's some evictions, there's some demolitions. Of course, there's bylaws that have to be protected, but there's ways around that. And we certainly see that with the owner, Stephen Littman, of the building where Cuchillo is housed. And that is really the fundamental contradiction, because Cuchillo is on the ground floor of the York Hotel, where people make less than $7,000 a year. And the shelter allowance is $7,000. Tenants in the York Hotel, which are close to 75, they live in rooms that we like to say, unfortunately, back home, that they're so small that you have to go outside to change your mind. We're talking about rooms that don't have kitchens. We have communal bathrooms. We're talking rodent and mite infestations. Just the whole onslaught of what goes with impoverished housing that even reminds people of tenement housing in New York in 1920. That's above Cuchillo.
The whole strategy of picketing restaurants, which began with Pigeon Restaurant, became very much attacked within the mainstream media. There's now going to be a picket of Cuchillo. Tell me why you think that picketing a restaurant is a good way to go.
Well, I think it's beyond symbolism. I mean, there have to be really concrete targets. And I think what was amazing about what they were able to do with the Pigeon protest, you know, people thought that was insane, extreme radicals picking on a poor restaurant that's courageous, right? They almost give it a kind of a title of being almost on a humanitarian mission, right, to set up shop in the downtown east side across the street from Pigeon Park, kind of a people's gathering place. But I think to build a movement and to create a coalition of allies on the West End and Commercial Drive, the downtown east side, among artists, among small business, among seniors that are being evicted, among working families, you need concrete targets that really speak to this broader manifestation of both restaurants and buildings and neighborhoods and unaffordability and a kind of bohemian culture. And to me, it was a perfect target to choose. And I think it continues with Cuchillo, which is even worse in certain respects than Pigeon.
What are the demands of the picket?
The demands are, they've always been consistent with what Pigeon is. It's building 5,000 units of social housing here in Vancouver. That's first and foremost. It's the need not to build small businesses for people that are wealthy, but to build social housing for people in distressed communities. That's the central feature of the demands here as well. And of course, I think the other thing that's more concrete too, and that pertains to the tenants in the York Hotel, is making sure that all rents are stabilized at $375, which is a shelter allowance. There's people there in the hotel that are paying $550. There's a rash of evictions that are happening. So we want to return it back to $375, that every room at the York Hotels above Cuchillo is set at the shelter allowance rate at $375.
If people want to get involved in the picket, what should they do?
They can certainly call me at 604-600-7994, Richard Marquez, with the anti-displacement movement here in the downtown east side. More than willing to talk with them and get them engaged. And also really to join us, because I think this is about something that it goes beyond protesting. Protesters have to become organizers. And we really have to use the movement that we're building and go citywide and build a broader anti-displacement movement throughout the city of Vancouver. So I would ask him to join us.
Thank you very much for coming in this morning, Richard.
Thank you.
I've been speaking with Richard Marquez. He's an anti-displacement activist and a social worker in the downtown east side. If you would like to know more about the picket against Cuchillo, I'll spell that for you in case you want to look it up. It's C-U-C-H-I-L-L-O. You can give Richard a call if you'd like to talk with him about it or if you'd like to get involved. He can be reached at 604-600-7994.